But I... He shook his head. When I see, I go back there. I was reliving it again and again, every time I closed my eyes. I couldn't make it stop any other way. He paused. Whom I gave it to is not your concern, though.
Davian opened his mouth, but grunted as another attack punched into him. It felt like his stomach was eating itself from the inside. He doubled over, gasping for breath. He knew it would pass. There had been three since he'd begun waiting for Malshash, but they seemed to be increasing in intensity. Malshash watched him, looking troubled.
There's no more time, Davian. We need to do this now.
Davian nodded, following Malshash into the building and along the long corridor. As they walked, more and more questions filled Davian's head. He scowled to himself.
Tell me one last thing before I leave, he said.
Malshash hesitated, then nodded.
Very well.
Why do you wear the faces of the people at the wedding? The ones who...
The ones I killed,
finished Malshash. He looked at Davian with an expression of immense sadness.
You haven't figured it out yet, have you?
Figured out what?
Malshash hesitated.
A shapeshifter can only take the form of someone who is dead, he said eventually.
Oh.
Davian lapsed into silence. Malshash was watching him expectantly, but Davian didn't know how he was supposed to react to that news. Idly, he wondered again about the identity of the blonde-haired man he had changed into. Whomever it had been was dead. It didn't bring him any closer to determining who it was. He wondered why Malshash had thought it so important to hide that detail from him. They were in the enormous room now, and Davian could see the gibbet itself lit up between the columns. As they approached, Malshash reached beneath his cloak and drew something out, an object that fit into the palm of his hand, shining slightly even in the dull light. They stopped just short of the altar, and Malshash held out the object for Davian to see.
We need to do one last thing before you go.
Davian stared in disbelief. The small bronze box gleamed, the strange symbols on it as alien as ever to his eyes. He stepped forward, snatching it from Malshash's grasp and examining it closely. There could be no doubt. This was the same vessel that had guided him to Caden. He shook it at Malshash.
Explain!
Malshash shook his head.
There's no time.
He put one hand over the box and the other on Davian's forehead. There was a flash of energy, a warmth flowing through him for a moment. Without asking, Davian knew that Malshash had just linked him to the box. Davian just stared at him, incredulous.
You lied to me, didn't you? You said you didn't know anything about my future. But that was before you showed me how to see lies through a shield.
Malshash didn't deny it, tucking the box back into his pocket. He faced Davian, looking him in the eye.
I tell you this, I tell you everything. And that's not safe for either of us. The only secrets a mind cannot give up are those it doesn't know, he said softly. You taught me that, Davian.
Davian looked at him, head spinning.
I taught you?
Another attack hit him without warning, and he cut off, falling to his knees. Pain ripped through his stomach, his chest. He felt like he might burst open at any moment. Malshash ran to him, looping a supporting arm under him and steadying him. They made their way over to the altar. Malshash helped Davian to sit on it, then held his hand out, palm up. Davian reluctantly slipped the silver ring off his finger. So this was it. The moment had finally come. His stomach hurt too much to feel the butterflies, but he knew they were there.
Just tell me,
groaned Davian, not taking his eyes from the ring.
Should I be trying to get that box to Caden? The man it leads me to in my time?
Yes,
snapped Malshash, his tone impatient.
Now clear your mind, Davian. It's time to concentrate.
Davian gritted his teeth. He had so many more questions he wanted to ask, but he gave a reluctant nod. He knew that aside from the training he'd been doing, there was no real way to prepare for what was coming. Even Melshash had admitted that everything he knew of the rift was theoretical. Davian was probably the only person to ever survive it, and now he had to do it again. Melshash placed the ring on the ground, then knelt and put his hand over it. He hesitated, though, twisting so he could look up at Davian.
"I have something I need you to remember. A message from me," he said. "That it was worth it. It changed me. And I am so very sorry."
Davian frowned, repeating the message as he noticed a glow beginning to shine out from beneath Malshash's hand.
"Who is it for?"
Malshash didn't reply for a few moments, then lifted his hand. All that remained of the ring was a small pool of molten metal on the ground. He stood, turning towards Davian. Even as he moved, Davian realized he was beginning to fade.
"It's for you, Davian," said Melshash softly. "You'll understand one day."
The great torrent washed him from view. Davian was once again within the rift. The river of gray nothingness was just as terrifying as before, but this time Davian's mind reacted with instinctive discipline. After the first few moments of chaos, he found himself concentrating, focusing on the flow rather than struggling to break free of it. As he did so, it seemed to slow, until it was a gentle stream rather than a raging river. He hovered within it, not comfortably, but no longer fearful of being torn apart by the raw power of this place. He floated for a moment, or an hour, or a day. There was no way to tell here. The longer he looked, the more he could see differences in the gray. A lighter patch here, a darker section there. Places he could go, if he so wished. Times he could go to. But that was not where the flow was taking him. Time was trying to correct itself. Though Melshash had not said so, it seemed only logical to Davian that the forces within the rift would therefore try to take him back to where he was supposed to be. So he passed by the distinct sections he made out, portals, as he thought of them, and waited patiently for a sign. When that sign came, it was unmistakable. To one side, the grays were banished by a shining light, so bright that it reminded him of pure essence. He pushed himself forward, not struggling, but guiding himself towards the light. He reached out to touch it. He groaned. How long had he been lying there? The stone was cold and rough against his cheek. His body felt drained, and hunger and thirst stabbed at him everywhere. He rolled, trying to get his bearings. Niamh's sightless eyes stared at him glassily. The pool of blood surrounding him had dried long ago, now black and flaky where Davian was lying in it. Davian stared sadly at the priest's body, the memories of what had happened rushing back. Somehow he'd hoped Niamh had survived, had miraculously been saved. It shouldn't have come as a surprise that the priest had bled out on the ground next to him, but it did. From the corner of his eye, Davian spotted something a little way away from Niamh's corpse. Forcing himself to his knees, he reached over to the satchel, slowly unbuckling it and emptying its contents on the ground. Some fruit, well and truly rotten. Some tough strips of salted meat, which he wolfed down without a second thought. Best of all was the canteen of water. Though he was tempted to try and down it all in a single gulp, Davian forced himself to take small sips, wetting his throat and moistening his lips only. There was a fountain a few streets away, but Davian had no idea if it would still be running in this time. He was still awfully weak. He briefly thought about trying to bury Niamh's body, but dismissed the idea as impractical. Not only was he not strong enough, but almost the entire city to the outskirts was paved. He nodded a silent, sad goodbye to the priest, then set off down the street. Despite knowing it was 90 years later, Davian felt completely at home. Nothing in the city seemed to have changed at all. Still, it was with some relief that he arrived at the central fountain to see it in proper working order. Without wasting another second, he opened his canteen and drank, savoring the cold, refreshing liquid as it flowed down his throat. It barely helped, though. His muscles were stiff and aching. Every step sent a jolt through his entire body. He stumbled over to one of the few remaining trees, leaning against it and draining it of its essence. He felt better as it blackened and crumbled, but not strong. He made his way gradually to the next and the next until they were all gone. He felt healthier, but far from whole. Still not well enough to make it out of the city. The rift had sucked his body dry of essence, had weakened him too much. He slowly made his way to the house where he and Malshash had stayed, but when he arrived, it was empty, the cupboards bare. There wasn't even any fuel for a fire. He closed his eyes, trying to think. He needed essence. The Javette was probably too far, even if he was willing to risk going near it again. Dilanus sucked essence dry almost everywhere else. Everywhere but a few places, like the great library. He was in no state to get out of the city, but he could make it there. It took him almost 30 minutes, by his estimate, to shuffle to the library. As with everything else, the enormous domed building was exactly as he remembered it, every detail identical to how he'd left it nearly a century earlier. Too weak to do anything except marvel at the fact, he stumbled inside, relieved to see the cool blue light of the advisor glowing in the main chamber. He collapsed against the short column, placing his hands over the blue light. He could feel it this time, now he knew what to look for. He wasn't controlling it, but his body was reaching out towards the essence, sucking it in. He drew a deep breath as his muscles relaxed, the ache of his head and stomach fading. He straightened, flexing his arms and legs experimentally. "Not bad," he muttered to himself. He turned to go, then hesitated. He was in the great library, knew how to use the advisor. Before, when he'd been there, his mind had been influenced by Malshash. He could see that clearly now. All the knowledge of the world at his fingertips, and he hadn't even been curious? He knew he should leave, but he also knew that the opportunity he had right now might never come again. He placed his hands over the blue light of the advisor and closed his eyes. What topics did he need to know about? He'd already read plenty of books on augur abilities. He probably wouldn't benefit much from more of those. What he did need was information on the threat that was coming to Andara. He needed to know more about Arkhine Devade. He needed to know more about the invaders he'd seen. He pictured their armor in his mind, that strange symbol, the three wavy lines. He opened his eyes. A single tendril of blue light was snaking out beyond the room. Davian hurried after it, eventually discovering where it had come to rest. A thick tome, bound in black leather, sitting beneath a pile of other books on a table in the corner. Davian picked it up and dusted it off. It had no title on the cover, so he flipped it open. "A collection of Darisian fables," he said, reading the title aloud. An odd book to have information on Devade, but this had been the first the advisor had chosen. It had never steered him wrong in the past. He hurried back, ready to collect the next tome. When he came to the main chamber, though, he stopped dead. No more tendrils of light emanated from the advisor. The blue glow of the column itself seemed to be dimmer, much dimmer, in fact. Davian rushed forward, crouching so that he was at eye level with the light. "No," he muttered in frustration. "Not yet, not now." He stood, placing his hands on the advisor and concentrating on augur abilities. He knew there were books on that topic here, plenty of them. When he opened his eyes, the light in the advisor had gone dead. 2,000 years, muttered Davian in disgust. "And you couldn't hang on for another 10 minutes? He gave the column a light kick, doing more damage to his toes than to the advisor. He knew what had happened. Like any vessel, the advisor stored a certain amount of essence, and when it ran low, it drew on the essence of the gifted using it. Except Davian had drawn from it instead, draining the remaining essence from the device, sucking it dry to restore his body to full health. It was a trade he'd had to make, but that knowledge made him no less irritated at the situation. The advisor could be recharged, of course, but only with another source of essence, something not readily available to him at the moment. Reluctantly slipping the sole book he had managed to find under his arm, he left, making his way out of the great library and down past the silent buildings of Dylanus. Orkoth would be around somewhere, but Davian knew he had nothing to fear from the creature, so he walked without concern for being seen. Despite his lack of success at the great library, his heart was lighter than it had been in a while. He was back in his own time. More than that, he was able to wield the power of the augurs and essence as an added bonus. He paused, the thought reminding him of what had happened after his first trip through the rift. He pulled up his shirt sleeve. The skin was still smooth beneath. Despite being back in his own time, his mark had not returned. Interesting. Perhaps if he avoided using too much essence, he could keep free of the tenants altogether. Davian imagined Weir's face when he revealed his bare forearm, told him what he'd just been through. He smiled to himself. Weir no doubt assumed he was dead. Though the thought should hardly have been amusing, his friend's expression simply at seeing him walk into the palace would no doubt be something to remember. Then, for the first time in weeks, his thoughts drifted to the school. During his time under Malshash's influence, his grief, so sharp just before Dylanus, had been muted, almost forgotten, so focused had he been on study. Now he was fully himself again, the pain of what had happened at Caladel returned, but it was fainter, an ache rather than an open wound, sadness rather than anguish. For the first time, he felt like he'd moved on, that things were going to get better. He made his way to the northern bridge, walking quickly but not hurrying. In some ways, he had grown fond of the city over the past couple of weeks, despite the constant gray, heavy mists that hung over it. There was beauty in its design when one could observe it without fear. He drank in the sight of the familiar buildings and roads, imprinting them on his memory. He had no intention of ever coming back, of risking any sort of proximity to the rift again. Then he was crossing the bridge. After a few minutes, he broke through the edge of the fog and into warm, bright sunlight. He squinted as pain shot through his eyes, unaccustomed as they were to the direct light of day. Once they had adjusted, he stood there for a few moments, face towards the sun, drinking in its warmth, its life. He could feel it now, he realized, even without concentrating. His body was drawing energy from the light and heat, sustaining itself. He consciously reached out and drew in a little more, grinning at the sudden flush of energy. He felt good, perhaps better than he ever had in his entire life. He kept walking until the bridge, the mists, Dylanus itself had disappeared from view. Headed east. It was time to go to Ilin Ilan. Chapter 40. Caden allowed himself to be ushered through the tunnels of Tol Athian, trying not to look intimidated. Tayris had headed straight for the toll once they'd parted ways with the others. Though the scarred man had ducked his head a few times when he'd spotted blue cloaks up ahead, the journey through Ilin Ilan's streets had been uneventful. There had been an empty quality to the city, though, a sense that things were too quiet. Everyone looked on edge, and it all only served to bring home the reality of what was coming. When they'd arrived at the toll, it had quickly become apparent that they were expected. As soon as Tayris had asked to see Counselor Ilanar, they had been immediately shackled and escorted inside. From the way Caden had three men flanking him, it didn't feel like they were being welcomed, either. Finally, they were shown into a small room, an office of some kind. "Wait here," said one of their escorts, his tone brusque. The door closed, the clicking of the lock punctuating the command. Caden looked at Tayris worriedly. "What's happening?" Tayris rubbed his forehead.
"The toll must have had advance word that I was coming," he said, looking grim. "Caroline, maybe, or..."
He cursed. "What?"
"Drass, the snake," Tayris groaned. "He was angry at Thrindar, and he knew where we were heading."
He shook his head.
"I hope I'm wrong, but..."
The lock clicked again, and the door swung open. Three gifted strode into the room, two men and a woman, the last one inside closing the door behind them. The first, clearly in charge, stopped and studied Tayris with cool blue eyes.
"Tayris, it has been a while," he said eventually,
stepping forward and offering his hand. There was no smile, but if the action wasn't friendly, it at least held a measure of respect.
"Nashrel, it's good to see you," said Tayris, gripping the man's hand and shaking it firmly. "You don't seem surprised to see me."
"We had word, an anonymous note, about a week ago."
His gaze shifted to Caden.
"Said you were alive, scarred, and that you were likely to turn up with an accused mass murderer."
Tayris sighed.
"Drass, then."
Nashrel raised an eyebrow at that.
"Lothlar?"
"Ran into him in Desrael. It's a long story."
"I'm sure."
Nashrel paused, still watching Caden.
"Is it true?"
"Another part of that long story."
"We might have to hear it soon, then,"
Nashrel turned.
"You remember Elder Hamish and Elder Sion? I didn't want to risk gathering the entire council in case an administrator got wind of it, but these two volunteered to be here."
"Insisted on it, actually."
Hamish was an older man, wrinkled with graying hair that on many people would have made them look distinguished, but on him just aged him further. He spoke with an unconscious sneer.
"Thought it would be a good idea to make sure you weren't coming back from the dead to cause more divisions, Sar. The damage you did 5 years ago was enough."
"That's enough, Hamish."
Sion was perhaps in her early 40s, an attractive lady with a strong bearing. She smiled at Tayris.
"I'm glad you're alive, Tayris. None of us thought you deserved that sentence."
She glared to her right.
"None of us."
Hamish muttered something under his breath, but gave a reluctant nod. Nashrel turned to study Caden again.
"So, your young friend here..."
"Caden," Tayris gestured to the elders. "Caden, as you've probably gathered, these are Elders Nashrel, Hamish, and Sion. We can trust them."
Caden nodded.
"Pleased to meet you," he said politely.
Nashrel and Sion nodded back, but Hamish glared at him with ill-concealed disgust.
"So you're the murderer,"
he turned to Tayris.
"You have a lot of explaining to do."
"Hamish, please."
Nashrel gave Tayris an apologetic look, but then sighed.
"He's right, though. It's probably time we heard that long story of yours."
Caden flushed under the stares of the three elders as Tayris finished explaining the events of the past few months. After a few seconds of silent study, Nashrel shifted.
"Show us your arm,"
he said quietly. Caden rolled back his sleeve, revealing the wolf tattoo, but otherwise bare skin beneath.
"That doesn't prove anything,"
pointed out Hamish.
"We would know if the Chattis were no longer under our control."
"Would we?"
asked Sion. Hamish scowled.
"I suppose, maybe not."
He rubbed his forehead, then looked at Tayris.
"But tell me this. Do you still think it's Arkhan David behind all this?"
Tayris hesitated.
"Yes," he conceded. "You know I do."
Hamish grimaced.
"And there it is. Chattis thinking for themselves. An enemy that can create echoes, supposedly one of David's favorite tricks. Ancient monsters in the mists of Dylanus. And Tayris Sar at the center of it all, bringing us the solution to our problems, saving the day, fulfilling the prophecies of Alchesh Meltak just like he always wanted."
He raised an eyebrow at Sion.
"Sound familiar?"
"That was a long time ago, Hamish," said Sion reprovingly.
Tayris reddened as he listened to the conversation.
"I'm not asking you to believe, Hamish. Just help Caden regain his memories. Find out what this vessel does. And if you don't believe he's gifted, just test him. You can see for yourself just how strong he is.
At worst, you'll be gaining a powerful ally.
Hamish shook his head.
At worst, sir, we'll be reminding a murderer who is not bound by the tenets of how to fully utilize his powers.
He sighed.
This invasion from the north, these blind, are just men. They don't have Dargaethan or Elatai or any of the old monsters alongside them. We can agree that they're dangerous, but that is why the Council has already made a decision about them.
Taris stiffened.
Which is?
Unless the king changes the tenets, the city can fend for itself. If they don't want our help, we'll do what is safest for us, which is to stay behind these walls. If the invasion succeeds in taking the city, then we will negotiate.
Hamish stared Taris in the eye. Taris looked at him for a long moment in disbelief, then turned to Nashril, horrified.
Is this true?
Nashril, who had remained silent up to this point, gave a tired nod.
I'm afraid so,
he said quietly.
I was against it, but some of the rhetoric we've heard coming from the palace lately. It's dangerous talk, Taris. The king has always felt like a neutral party when it comes to the gifted, but these past few weeks he sounded more like a loyalist.
He looked at the ground.
We have to start thinking about ourselves.
But you won't be able to hide behind your walls. Not like in a war, said Taris, his tone urgent now.
These people won't negotiate. I told you what we saw in Gahil. What you claim you saw?
Hamish sighed.
Taris, we went through this 5 years ago and it nearly tore the toll apart. Dvade is dead. If he was ever even alive. We need to face the reality of the invasion, not pretend it's some ancient evil come to destroy us.
Taris groaned.
You're being obtuse, Hamish.
Hamish stiffened, but Nashril held up his hand.
You lied to us once, Taris. He has a right to question.
Taris said nothing for a moment.
What about Ilseth Tenvar? You said yourself he was a traitor, a conspirator in the deaths of hundreds of gifted students, and I told you that he sent the vessel to Caden before I knew any of that. Surely that verifies at least part of what I've said, and surely you want to understand more about what Tenvar was involved in, too.
Taris gave Nashril a steady look.
You know me, Nashril. We may have differing views about many things, but I'm not a fool. I haven't risked my life, come back here just to tell you a lie.
Nashril held Taris's gaze for a few seconds, then sighed.
I know,
he said reluctantly. He looked around at the other two elders.
He makes some valid points, and this isn't a choice that should be left to us alone. We need to discuss it with the others.
He turned back to Taris.
Whatever we decide, though, no one here will turn you into administration. You have my word.
Taris looked relieved.
Thank you, he said. Please take what time you need. Caden and I can wait.
You can wait here. We owe you that much.
Nashril shook his head slowly.
But we do not know Caden, except for what you've told us and what we know of his crimes. It would be irresponsible of me to have him wait anywhere except for in a cell.
Caden felt his heart sink and his muscles tensed. They were going to lock him up? Every nerve in his body screamed for him to do something. His thoughts immediately flashed back to the last time he was imprisoned. He clenched his fists, and light beads of sweat began forming on his brow. Taris glanced at Caden with a worried expression.
Alleged crimes, he corrected.
First, I need your word that he will be released back into my custody as soon as you have made your decision, either way, and that he will come to no harm in the meantime.
Nashril looked at him with vague surprise.
Of course,
he said sincerely. Taris glanced at Caden, giving him the slightest of nods.
He means it. You will be fine, he murmured.
Caden gritted his teeth but nodded back, forcing himself to relax. Tayrus turned back to Nashrell.
Very well.
Nashrell hesitated.
One other thing. We will need to take custody of the vessel.
What?
Tayrus frowned.
I would prefer...
This isn't negotiable, Tayrus.
Tayrus grimaced, then inclined his head, reaching into a pocket and drawing out the bronze box. As always, it shone like the sun to Caden's eyes. Tayrus reluctantly gave it to Nashrell.
Can I at least hang on to the other one?
He asked. Nashrell paused in his examination of the box.
The other one?
The other vessel I found in Desrael.
Tayrus held up a smooth black stone about the size of his palm.
I haven't been able to determine what it does yet, but it seems harmless enough. Nothing to do with Caden, though.
Nashrell stared at the stone for a long moment, and Caden thought he saw a glimmer of recognition in the elder's eyes.
What is it?
Asked Sion. Nashrell didn't respond for a few seconds.
I don't know, he said slowly. But we should hang on to it.
Tayrus scowled, giving up the second vessel to Nashrell too. But as he did so, Caden thought he saw a flicker of acknowledgement pass between the two men. An understanding. Then it was done, and Tayrus was gripping Caden's shoulder.
Don't worry. You won't be locked up for long, he said in a reassuring tone.
After Nashrell had talked to someone outside, Caden found himself being led away. He and his escort descended a flight of stairs until they came to some basic cells carved out of the bedrock of Ilin Tora itself. They were little more than small caves with doors made of steel bars. Once Caden was inside, he realized there would only just be room to lie flat on the ground, and when he stood straight, his head was only inches from the roof. He felt a flash of gratitude that fate had not made him any taller, and that despite his experiences, he had no particular fear of confined spaces. The jailer locked the door and moved a little way down the hall to a more open part of the passageway, where his desk and chair sat.
No funny business, and we'll get along just fine, he called as he wandered away.
Glowing essence orbs lined the hallway outside, but the cells themselves were quite dark. Caden shifted, trying to see if there was anyone in the cell opposite. He moved forward to the bars, squinting as the light hit his eyes. Suddenly a face appeared in the opposite cell, and Caden could see a shackle glinting on the other man's arm. The stranger smiled, a wide grin of triumph. Even through the bars, Caden could tell the man was staring at the bared tattoo on his wrist. The glow of the wolf's head was weaker. Tayrus and the vessel must be a good deal further away now. The other prisoner wouldn't be able to discern the light, of course, but the tattoo itself was still plain enough to see.
Drekaran Si, the stranger said quickly. Shatel me Athras Dar?
It was clearly a question, but Caden had no idea what the man was saying. Caden shook his head.
I'm sorry, he said. I have no idea what language you're speaking.
The man looked at him in shock for a few moments, then vanished from his doorway, retreating into the gloom of his cell. The jailer called out from his desk.
Nonsense words, lad, he confided. Ignore him. That one's scheduled for the lower dungeons. He's just here temporarily. We think his mind's gone. Only stands to reason the first thing he says since being locked up is gibberish.
Caden frowned. He hadn't understood what the prisoner had said, but the sound was too regular, too structured to be nonsense. And the language was familiar. As if he concentrated hard enough, he might be able to ascertain the meaning of the prisoner's words.
Who is he?
He called out. Caden could hear the jailer spitting on the ground.
Name's Ilseth Tenvar, he said. He had something to do with that bad business in the schools recently. Not sure what exactly. They don't tell me much. But he's supposed to be in here, don't you worry about that. Not a man you want to be making friends with.
Caden nodded, though mostly to himself, as he knew the jailer couldn't see him. He stared at the cell across the hallway, trying to see into the murk. He remembered Davian and Weir talking about this man, the one who had tried to send him the vessel. And Tenvar had seemed to know him, to recognize him despite what the jailer said. He settled down in the corner to wait, knees drawn up to his chest, all the while keeping a close eye on the cell opposite. Despite the two layers of thick steel bars between them, he did not feel particularly safe. It was hours later when someone finally unlocked his cell door, escorting him back to the main tunnel. He smiled in relief when he saw Tayris waiting for him.
"What did they say?"
Tayris scowled.
"Exactly what Hamish said. There's no proof. There's no indication that the blind are anything more than men. Helping you is too much of a risk."
He shook his head in disgust.
"Their theory is that the blind are a race of people descended from us, from the Andorans that were trapped behind the boundary during the Eternity War. The Council agrees that they're dangerous, but not that they are anything worse."
"So they won't restore my memories?"
"They were almost willing to, and then..." Tayris sighed. "I have a long history with the Council, Caden, and that has gone against us. I'm sorry for that. A few of them argued that the risk was worth it. Some even believed me, but most of them are just angry at the moment. They feel betrayed by the King. The argument was, why take a chance restoring your memories for the good of the city when the city doesn't even seem to want their help?"
"But they're in danger too," Caden protested.
"They don't see it that way.
Tolathian withstood everything Varden Shal and the Loyalists could throw at it during the Unseen War. They don't believe the blind will be any different."
Caden was silent for a moment.
"So what now?"
"We go to the palace. I was speaking to Aelric and Dizia earlier today, and they think there's a chance they can convince the princess to help. With her influence behind us, we might still be able to change some minds at the toll."
Caden gave Tayris a dubious frown, remembering the disdainful way Caroline had looked at him in Thrindar.
"Are you sure that's a good idea?"
"I never said it was a good idea," observed Tayris dryly. "But it's the only option we have right now."
They walked out of the toll. It was mid-afternoon and the streets were busier now. Tayris appeared lost in his own thoughts, but eventually Caden tapped him on the arm. Tayris turned.
"What is it, lad?"
"I have something to ask you," Caden said hesitantly. "I heard someone say something in the dungeons. I couldn't translate it this time, but it sounded like the same language the Shateth use. Is that possible?"
Tayris frowned.
"I don't know. Maybe," he said slowly. "Do you remember what they said?"
Caden screwed up his face, trying his best to remember the words.
"Drakaran si, shaltail me athris dar."
Tayris's eyebrows rose.
"Honored lord, has the time finally come?" he translated.
His expression became focused.
"Who said this, Caden? The language is old, rare."
He stopped, forcing Caden to look him square in the eye.
"It's important."
Caden shook his head, suddenly sick to his stomach.
"I don't know. I couldn't see them from my cell, just heard the words," he lied.
Tayris bit his lip.
"I know Ilseth Tenvar was in those cells," he said, almost to himself. "But it sounds like perhaps Athian has more than one traitor in its midst."
He started walking again, lost in thought. Caden stared after him for a moment, then trotted to catch up, grimly returning his attention to the road ahead. Perhaps the Council had been right not to trust him after all.
Chapter 41. Weir stared up at the palace gates with trepidation. In times of peace, they stood open, an invitation for anyone, no matter their rank, to come before the king or one of his judges and have a complaint heard. They were shut today, of course. Several guardsmen stood at attention in front of them and assembled in a vaguely threatening manner when Weir and the others approached.
"Move on," said one,
a grizzled-looking veteran that Weir didn't recognize.
His tone was firm. Only members of the court or those with appointments may enter today.
Aelric raised an eyebrow.
Don't recognize me, Ethan?
The man stared at Aelric for a moment, then started.
Young Shaneweir.
He re-scanned the group, his eyes coming to rest on Ditzia.
And your sister. Of course, of course.
His gruff manner had vanished, and he was all smiles now.
My apologies. Princess Caroline asked that you and your party be brought to her as soon as you arrived, no matter the time, day or night.
Aelric hesitated.
I'd hoped to get cleaned up first.
He indicated his clothes, which were showing the wear and tear of travel, not to mention the odd bloodstain. Ethan smiled.
No offense, Aelric, but if it's a choice of displeasing you or the princess, you're out of luck.
He slapped Aelric on the back in a familiar fashion.
I heard you did well at the song.
Aelric made a face.
Not well enough, I'm afraid.
Ethan gestured for another guard to open the gate, then led them through.
Second's still an impressive achievement, lad. And there's plenty of years left in you, too, he said cheerfully.
He glanced across at Ditzia.
I trust you're well also, Ditzia.
Ditzia smiled.
Just glad to be home, Ethan.
The guardsman closed the gate behind them.
I hope we can keep it that way, he said as they headed into the grounds. You've heard about the blind, of course?
Aelric inclined his head.
We crossed paths with some of what they left behind. It was not pleasant.
Ethan nodded, expression solemn.
It will be a relief once General Jashtar and the rest of our men have dealt with them.
He glanced around, then lowered his voice.
Just a warning. The houses haven't been especially happy with things lately. General Paraith has been having some issues keeping the troops that are still here in line, and the king... Well, let's just say that Caroline will be glad to see you. She could use some friends about now.
Weir listened with interest. That the houses were causing problems was hardly surprising and certainly nothing new. But Ethan's tone had indicated something more was going on, something serious. They made their way through the palace corridors. Little had changed. Every time they rounded a corner, Weir found himself reliving another childhood memory. He'd played with Caroline in these halls. He smiled briefly as they passed a large floral vase on a pedestal. That was at least one thing that was different. As a child, such decorative displays had been removed, lest they meet an accidental demise at his and Caroline's hands. But those days, unfortunately, were long gone. His smile faded as his thoughts returned to what lay ahead. Ethan guided them to the princess's quarters, pausing outside to let Caroline's attendant know who was there to see her. After a moment inside, the woman returned.
The princess will see them immediately, she said to Ethan.
Ethan nodded.
Time for me to go back to my post, then, said the grizzled guard.
He nodded to Aelric.
Good to see you again, lad.
Aelric smiled.
You too, Ethan.
Weir, Aelric, and Ditzia entered Caroline's chambers. Weir was surprised to see that they were relatively unadorned. The princess had been fond of decorations and finery in her earlier years. Caroline herself reclined, apparently at ease, in a chair over to one side. But the dark circles beneath her eyes, covered though they were with makeup, betrayed her. Weir had never seen her looking so tired. She gave a brief smile when she saw them, a glimmer of relief flickering across her face before her usual calm, composed look was restored.
You may leave us, Nalisi,
she said to the older woman, her tone polite but firm. The attendant curtsied and shuffled from the room. As soon as the door had closed, Caroline leapt from her chair, her smile returning.
You're safe,
she exclaimed, hugging first Ditzia, then Aelric, then Weir.
It's been so long, and with the blind coming...
She let out a deep breath.
It was a near thing, Your Highness, said Aelric.
He waited for the princess to sit, then sat in one of the chairs opposite. He peered at her, eyes narrowing.
You look exhausted.
He paused, reddening as he suddenly remembered who he was talking to.
I apologize, Your Highness. That's not to say...
Caroline, much to everyone's surprise, threw back her head and laughed. She quickly contained her mirth, but traces of amusement still played around her lips.
"That might be the first honest thing I've heard in weeks," she said, shaking her head.
She gave Aelric a rueful smile. "You can dispense with the formalities, Aelric. Nobody can hear us in here, and honestly, you're no picture of health yourself." She gestured pointedly to Aelric's torn and blood-stained clothes. Aelric smiled back in relief, happy she hadn't taken offense.
"I'm just glad Ethan recognized me."
"That was a stroke of luck," agreed Caroline.
She paused, looking at Weir.
"What of the others you were traveling with?"
"Tayris and Caden went to Tol Athian to see if they are willing to restore Caden's memories," said Weir.
He looked at the ground.
"Davian didn't make it."
Caroline's smile slipped.
"I'm so sorry, Tor."
There was silence for a few moments, and then Caroline glanced up at Aelric.
"You know who this is now?"
Aelric just nodded, looking slightly abashed.
"Good. Then I don't need to tell you again how important it is to keep the details of your journey a secret?"
"No, we won't say anything," Aelric assured her.
Caroline nodded her acknowledgement, then looked at Dizia, smiling.
"I'll hear all about the trip later, I'm sure. But first I should catch up with Torin."
Dizia inclined her head, then grabbed her brother and pulled him out of the room.
"So,"
Caroline sighed once they had left,
"it seems I owe you an apology."
Weir raised an eyebrow.
"How so?"
"You warned me about the boundary weeks before the invasion."
Caroline grimaced.
"I should have listened."
"You believe me now?"
"I believe at least some of it, and I'd be foolish not to at least consider the rest. There have been no signs of any Dargaethan, but the things we've been hearing about the blind..."
Caroline shook her head.
"And my father?"
"Isn't sure what to think at the moment. I told him you'd ended up in Desriel because you were investigating the boundary and that you'd promised to explain everything to him when you got back. That at least got him thinking about where the blind might be from."
She looked him in the eye.
"He's going to want to know everything, Tor."
"I know, but I've already figured out how to tell him most of the story without letting on about Tayris and Caden."
Weir hesitated.
"I assume you didn't tell him?"
Caroline snorted.
"That you were traveling with a man he'd sentenced to death? Of course not."
"Good,"
Weir exhaled.
"Because I told Tayris to come here if he wasn't successful at the toll. I told him that we might be able to help, convince the council of Caden's importance, if necessary."
He held up his hand as Caroline made to protest.
"Only if they fail, in which case they'll have no other option. I didn't offer without giving it some serious consideration, Kara. We both know that there are ways you can pressure the toll without ever having your name brought into it."
He stared at her pleadingly, willing her to understand.
"Caden's key to all this. We need to help them any way we can. As long as they both stay out of administration's sight, it shouldn't be a problem.
Except that I will knowingly be giving one accused mass murderer and one convicted one free access to the city."
Caroline looked at him in disbelief.
"I said that I believed there was something to Sar's claims, not that I thought he was in any way trustworthy. I don't feel comfortable with this, Tor."
Weir grimaced.
He'd hoped he wouldn't have to do this, hated the thought of tainting Davian's name even just with Caroline, who hadn't known him.
But Davian was dead and Tayris and Caden needed help. He took a deep breath.
"Tayris made a false confession 3 years ago. He didn't kill those men."
He quickly, bleakly explained the true events of that day to Caroline, who listened to the story in silence.
"You believe him?"
she asked once he was finished.
"Yes. It all fits. Everything from why administration thought he'd broken the first tenet to how he got his scars."
Caroline sighed.
"It would explain much," she admitted, still sounding reluctant. "It's hard for me to make a judgment for myself. But if you honestly believe that's the truth, then I will too. Should Tayris and Caden require it, I will reach out to some of my contacts, see how much we can lean on the council without them knowing who's behind it." She frowned at him. But before I do that, I expect to speak to your new friends. My help will be conditional, and I hope neither of our fathers finds out, else fate save us both.
Weir exhaled in relief.
Thank you, Kara. I owe you, he said sincerely. Then he leaned forward in his seat. How is your father?
Caroline looked sick.
What have you heard?
That he's been ranting against the gifted, that it doesn't seem like he will be willing to change the tenets no matter the cost.
Weir frowned.
It doesn't sound like him.
Caroline sighed. It's not, she said, pain evident in her voice. He's sick, I think. I can't explain it. One moment he'll be fine, almost normal, and then the next he'll fly into a rage. He's always tired and paranoid about everything and everyone, especially Tol Athian. When word of the invasion came, he thought it was a trick by the gifted to get him to change the tenets.
She shivered.
That was his first thought.
Why would he think that?
I don't know. Caroline rubbed her forehead. He refuses to believe the blind are a real threat to the city, despite what they've done so far. He virtually ignores your father, and I'm finding it harder and harder to get past his guards to see him too. He won't even listen to Layman Kardai half the time, and those two have been friends for nearly 20 years.
She hesitated.
He sweats. His skin is gray. He often doesn't eat his meals. People are saying it's just stress, but I'm worried.
Weir felt a chill.
You think the blind have something to do with it?
Caroline gestured.
I don't know. That's the problem. I tried talking to him about it, and he just laughed it off.
Her face twisted.
And I daren't bring it up with any of the houses.
Not if you don't want a coup on top of everything else, agreed Weir.
Caroline nodded tiredly. So there you have it. It's been a long couple of weeks. But Faiths, it's good to have you back. I've missed you.
Weir grinned.
Missed you too, Kara.
He raised an eyebrow.
So what now?
Caroline gave the ghost of a smile.
Now we get to have a feast to celebrate the return of Torin Andrus, back from his glorious triumphs in Calandra. I'm sure the generals here will be dying to hear of your exploits.
Weir groaned.
Is that really necessary? There is an army coming this way, after all.
Caroline shrugged.
The houses will think that more of a reason, not less. Partly because everyone wants a chance to become your new closest friend, of course, and partly because most of them are fools, and they'll welcome any chance to ignore what is happening rather than confront it.
Weir laughed.
It has been a rough couple of weeks for you to talk like that.
Caroline rolled her eyes.
You have no idea. They're vultures, Tor. You would not believe the number of none too subtle offers I've already had to make me queen. At a price once it's done, of course.
She shook her head in disgust.
Regardless, they will all want a feast, and it will look suspicious if you return to too little fanfare.
Wonderful, said Weir dryly.
Caroline raised an eyebrow.
You're going to have to get used to this again, you know.
I know.
Weir bit his lip.
Speaking of which, I should probably go and see my family. No one else knows I'm back except for you.
Caroline smiled, her expression softening.
Of course. You must be eager to see them. And I know they will be delighted to see you. Your father's been so worried, Torin.
Weir grimaced.
He wondered exactly how much trouble he was going to be in for going to Desriel.
At least it would be a private scolding, he consoled himself, and only after the, hopefully, happy reunion.
Lead the way, he said.
Caroline hesitated.
First, let me arrange for some quarters so that you can rest.
And bathe, she added, taking in his weary expression and ragged clothing.
Your mother would likely faint if she saw you in this condition. Another hour or so of waiting won't kill them.
Weir grunted.
Good point.
He trailed after Caroline, mentally steeling himself for what was to come, the whirlwind of attention and false smiles that he had dreaded for so long. There was no turning back now. Weir waited nervously. He had just spent the last 2 hours being clucked over by the palace tailor, an older man who had nearly had a heart attack when he'd seen what the prince was wearing. First Weir had been bathed by some servants, a most uncomfortable experience in and of itself, and his hair had been cut to the latest style of the city. His beard, which had grown out to be quite scraggly since Thrindar, had been trimmed down to a neat goatee. Then he'd been given a torrent of information regarding the latest news from Calandra, most of which he doubted he'd remember if anyone quizzed him. Still, it was enough to get by. He could always plead tiredness if the questions became too in-depth. Now he was waiting for his family, his father, mother, and younger sister, to come and greet him. He didn't know whether to feel excited or anxious. Would they have changed in the last 3 years? Would they still see him as they once had, or had the time away colored their opinions of him? He fiddled with his sleeves again, frowning at the lace on the cuffs. The entire suit felt odd, uncomfortable, against his skin after so many years. It made him feel like a child again, no longer able to choose what he wore. The sound of the door opening made him flinch. He spun to see his father's familiar blue-cloaked frame in the doorway, with his mother and Deldry peering in behind. They all stared for a moment, silent, as if surprised to see each other was really there. Then there was a blur of motion, and he was being swept up in a fierce hug from his father, squeezing out a laugh as the pressure on his ribs made it hard to breathe. Elosion had always been so reserved. This was an unexpected display of emotion, though not unwelcome. They were soon joined by two more bodies as Galadra and Deldry joined in the hug, his mother emitting a couple of sobs as she held him in her arms. Suddenly he couldn't stop from smiling. As much as he had dreaded returning here, he had missed his family, even his father, with whom he had never truly gotten along. "It's good to see you," he said, grinning, as they all finally separated. Galadra gave him an affectionate smile, dabbing at her eyes. "We've missed you." She stepped back, examining him. "Calandra has been good to you, Torin. You look strong and healthy." Weir nodded, still smiling, though the comment sent a pang of guilt through him. His mother and Deldry hadn't been told where he'd been. Didn't know, even now. "The last few years were more than worthwhile," he said honestly. "You got my letters?"
"We did,"
said Deldry, her tone reproachful.
"You could have described some of your battles in them, though."
Though neither his father or mother looked much different, a little more tired around the eyes, perhaps, and his mother was slightly more gray in her hair, the changes in Deldry were dramatic. Gone was the chubby 9-year-old, and in her place was a slim, confident-looking girl that was tall enough now to look him in the eye without craning her neck. Weir smiled. "There wasn't much to tell, really. Sometimes the barbarians attacked our fortress, but they were never organized enough to pose a real threat." Deldry nodded.
"I heard you came back with Aelric Shaneweir," she said suddenly.
Weir blinked in surprise.
Yes, we met on the road back." "What's he like?"
Deldry leaned forward, her expression eager. Galadra sighed.
"You can harass your brother for gossip another time," she said in a stern tone, rolling her eyes. "We have much to catch up on."
She sat down, and everyone followed suit. They talked for an hour or so, soon lapsing into the comfortable style of conversation that Weir knew only came with being related. He kept talk of Calandra to a minimum, instead focusing on what had been happening in the others' lives. His mother and sister did most of the talking. Deldry especially chattered on for quite some time, much to Weir's astonishment. When he had left, she had been so quiet that he would often forget she was even there. Finally, Galadra glanced at Elosion, who gave her a slight nod in return.
"We should go," she said, tugging on Deldry's arm. "Your father and Torin have other things to speak of."
Deldry pouted, but acquiesced, rising and giving Weir an abrupt, affectionate hug before leaving. Weir grinned as he watched them go. "Deldry is growing up," he said. The Duke nodded absently.
"Too fast," he sighed. "I've already had houses asking whether their sons might be a suitable match."
"Already?" Weir shook his head. "They really are vultures." Elosian stared at him for a moment, then chuckled.
"I see your time away has done nothing to dampen your dislike of them," he said with amusement.
His smile faded, expression turning serious.
"I'm so relieved you are safe, Torin. When the news came about the school..."
Weir grimaced. "I suppose I have some explaining to do." He spent the next hour relating his last couple of months to his father. He told Elosian most of the story, including Davian's true role. As much as it hurt, there seemed little point in keeping his friend's ability a secret anymore. In the end, he omitted only Tayrus's real name and the fact that Tayrus and Caden had accompanied them back. Elosian was surprisingly understanding throughout the tale, so much so that, for a moment, Weir considered telling him the truth about Tayrus and Caden as well. But he dismissed the idea as soon as he'd had it. Those two needed every opportunity to convince the Toll to restore Caden's memories without administration's interference. And he remembered his father's opinion of Tayrus all too clearly. A monster was what he'd called him 3 years ago. The very worst of the gifted. No, he couldn't say anything. The risk was too great. When Weir had finished, Elosian let out a long breath.
"You've been through so much," he said, shaking his head in wonder. "I want to be angry at you for going to Desriel, but it seems that running away ended up saving your life. For that, I am truly grateful."
He leaned back.
"I should tell you, too, we found out about the elder who tricked your friend into leaving. Tol Athian have him safely locked away in their dungeon, but he refuses to say anything."
Weir felt his eyebrows rise. With all that had happened, he'd almost forgotten how this had all started.
"That is good news," he said, nodding.
He determined to pay Ilseth Tenvar a visit at some point. Elosian leaned forward.
"So, your letters seem to indicate you were happy enough, but tell me, how did you find the last few years?"
Weir thought for a moment. "They were the happiest of my life," he said sincerely. The sentiment was laced with sadness and regret, though. Any thoughts of his life at the school always would be now. Elosian smiled.
"I'm glad. I always wondered whether it was the right choice, sending you there."
He bit his lip.
"Given what has been happening here, I suspect it was the best choice I've made in a long time."
"You're talking about Uncle?" Elosian nodded.
"He's ill, Torin. I think he..."
A knock at the door cut him off. After a few seconds, the door opened, and a young woman's face appeared. A shadow, Weir realized absently, not really paying attention. The girl's eyes were on his father.
"Duke Andrus," she began in a formal tone, "I have some news, I think..."
She trailed off. Weir started as he realized the girl was staring at him, mouth agape. He flushed, shuffling uncomfortably,